Show Me the Way, podcast 25, The Pioneering Coach. In this episode, we talk with Dwayne Abel of Pioneer IQ about his experiences in succession and exit planning and how he helps individuals make an impact in their business. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain, LLP, about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, successful exits, and I'm your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is Dwayne Abel. Dwayne will share his experiences and insights in his role as an owner of a group assisting business owners, especially in the area of growth and succession planning. I know that Dwayne's thoughts will be of help to all of us, and it's important in my world as these are the steps you have to go through as you begin the journey through the monetization of your business. So let's get started. Let's get into it. Dwayne, if you would, give us a little bit of flavor about your background and your early business experiences. Where were you born and raised?
Well, let's just start off with something that disqualifies me. I actually grew up in a small town called Sour Lake, Texas. For those of you, all of you, the 100% of you who have not heard of that town, it's actually the original oil field of Texas. So I am frankly a fifth generation contractor and was raised in petroleum construction. I then spent, you know, obviously my life there early on in Southeast Texas and then came to Mid-America Nazarene University, played football in college. And that's really where I started connecting with my purpose and the world that I felt called to.
So I always ask this question from anybody from East Texas. Where is the town you're talking about from? Is it Natchitoches? I think I said it right. There's Natchitoches and what's the one in Louisiana? I always goof those up. I'm sorry.
No, Natchitoches is actually a nicer town. That is in the central of East Texas, but the town I grew up in is called Sour Lake. It's about 80 miles right east of Houston, 30 miles north of the water.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Natchitoches is a little bit further away. I better stay away from that name because I'm not gonna get it right no matter what I do. It's humorous because one of the guys on the podcast a long time ago, Mike Waters, from that part of the world, needless to say. So after college, bring us forward. What did you do after college? Because you know you came from contractors. You must have been working in the oil field in Texas.
Yep. So like I said, I mentioned that I literally worked in oil fields from the time I was 14 till the time I was about 19, maybe 20 or so, obviously in the summers and a holiday, long weekends and whatnot. But yeah, got to Mid-America Nazarene. And again, while I was there, I found a general contractor at the time. It was a company named EBCO Construction Group. And I got recruited to EBCO as an intern that quickly turned into a permanent role and was able really early on to get into branding, marketing, sales process, you know, communications, those types of things for that general contractor, and had a really unique mentor at the time. It was Mr. Don Eby, who passed away maybe 10 years ago, but he was originally one of the pioneers of assisted living and it really was great at constantly thinking about my purpose. And through that process, I realized that I was really more passionate about building construction companies than I was about building buildings, which is what we were doing. And, you know, that really helped launch or propel me into starting Pioneer, which I did in the late 99, early 2000. And literally, you know, 99, 98% of all of our work for the past 24 years has been in the architecture, engineering, construction, and trade space. So obviously a group of people that I'm passionate about.
Boy, it sounds like it. Break that down. Can you break that down by general subs, architects, engineers, or is it so all over the board you can't even break it down?
No, for sure. But yeah, we primarily only work with folks in the commercial space. We don't really work with many residentials,
right?
Residential guys at all. But in the commercial space, we work with general contractors. We work with architects, a few architects. We work with a lot of engineers, both vertical engineers and horizontal engineers. We work with a lot of specialty trade folks, concrete contractors, MEP contractors. You know, we really work the spectrum there. And most of all of our work is just only in the U.S. So we literally work Maui to Miami, which is, you know, for the 23-year period, you kind of get some cool work. But yeah, we have clients in most states. We don't do much work with international clients, but we do work with U.S. clients who do work internationally.
Interesting.
So it kind of gives you a little bit of perspective.
That's a broad reach. So, and you've been doing this now 25 years, is that correct?
Yeah, 24 years. We started in 99.
And so going through this process, how does somebody hire you? I mean, how do they come up to find you, right, to get you involved? How does that work?
Yeah, so most of all of our clients come in through speaking engagements or referrals. So like, for example, I'm literally at the DBIA Southwest annual conference here in Frisco, the DFW area right now. The conference kicked off about 3 hours ago. And we do a ton of speaking at these types of association conferences. And so I'd say we probably get 75% of our business from these types of speaking engagements. The other 25% come from referrals or from some sort of email or social media marketing, but primarily it's all word of mouth.
So I imagine a large part of what you do is helping people grow their business. You're helping people work better together, higher level of communication, hopefully towards profitability. And then at some point, some kind of succession planning. Am I kind of hitting the nail on the head?
Yeah. In general, you know, the way that I like to say, Dave, is we build construction companies. Now, we build design and construction companies. And how we do that is literally by helping executives and managers really understand who in their organization has the potential to lead. And so we're developing their leaders. Number two, we're helping to scale and build their business. So it could be at the company-wide level where we're trying to help them, you know, with strategic planning and some of our tools, build the business or scale it, or we work with different divisions and teams. And then the third thing that we typically are doing is helping them to understand which markets to get into, get out of, or expand. So we've been doing market intel with two economists and a market analyst since 2002, which is a kind of a big part of our business there.
What is the average length of time, or is there an average length of time for engagement that you have?
Yeah, no, great question. I actually get that question all the time. Matter of fact, I got it twice today. But typically people are like, if someone wants to go through our leadership boot camp, it's a 2-month engagement. But the majority of all of our engagements are between, you know, 12 and 24 months. You know, that's typically what's in writing. You know, we've been blessed with having a lot of companies who've had a lot of growth, and we've been with them for 5 or 6 or 7, 10 years, if you will. But, you know, typically it's that 18 to 24 month time frame.
Excellent. So part of this is going to be obviously helping people as they evolve and advance, figure out how they're going to raise people up and ultimately, sure, deal with the issue of succession planning. Someone that will come in and take over ownership and operation of the business. Is that part of your overall plan?
Yeah, that's actually a big part of what we do. Probably 90, and I'm giving you a rough estimate, between 85 and 90% of every one of our clients that we've worked with at minimum the last 15 years are either about to go through, are currently in, or have just completed some sort of a transition. And our whole objective, when they bring us in, our primary objective is to literally help them to develop a leadership team, put a vision and a plan in place, and really start to help those leaders deploy and scale and build the business.
Interesting. So how do you help people go through the succession planning process? That is, you've got, let's take, for example, an owner, and he's saying, I've got to figure out what's next in my life. I want to move on. How do you help people figure out who to bring on, whether it's internally or externally, and the path that you go down in order to make that happen? Because at the end of the day, and you've probably seen it, any number of business owners, this is a very emotional time and also a very difficult time from the vantage point that I find often many of the individuals going through this, they don't have a next. They just have retirement, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
And to your point, here's my individual philosophy to follow up on that. I believe that everyone now has the opportunity to live to be 100, thanks to medicine, thanks to, you know, health, thanks to just the way we live our lives. You can live to be 100. And so one of the challenges I see for individuals is that when they leave, and I do mean primarily men, what are they going to do? How have you dealt with that? How have you coached people up?
Well, you're hitting on a couple of really, let's say, areas that I have a really strong opinion about. Matter of fact, Dave, when you asked me to do this, I thought, man, that's going to be fun. I love working with Dave, and I've always been, quite frankly, entertained with some of the stories that we get to talk about and how you help clients. But I also told myself, man, I got to be careful because you're hitting on subjects that I have really strong opinions about, Dave. So if good, I get a little bit good. Too far off, you got to let me know. But
go for it.
I got to tell you, man, I love this. I love helping owners with this hurdle in their business. But the number one thing that is most frustrating for me, and I think most frustrating for them, is that people wait too long to start the process.
Thank you.
I literally have companies who I sat down with last week and they said, hey, Dwayne, we really have been able to identify and start to develop some leaders. We got to get into a succession plan. I'm like, okay, great. I've kind of been waiting on the conversation. Let's talk about it. First and foremost, let's talk about timeline. 3 years for what? And, you know, if it's a 3-year timeline for a leadership transition, great. But 3-year timeline for an asset transition, that's a different ballgame.
Right.
And it takes a long time. And the more time people give themselves, the more they plan and prepare for that, the better decisions they can make about future leaders, the better plan they can put in place to actually build the business to be sustainable. And thirdly, I have rarely ever seen someone who plans and prepares really well not get what they really want out of the business, you know? And so that I feel better just saying that, getting that off my chest, because that's usually the biggest barrier to a successful, you know, transition. But yeah, there's a couple of really critical things that if I could wave a magic wand, we would help everyone with in this process. Number one is helping leaders who are trying to make the transition, help them understand what their business is actually about besides the balance sheet. You know, I think it's really hard for a lot of us to understand that the current leadership model that we're implementing into the construction space is broken. It's literally from World War II. You know, I had both my grandparents who I genuinely loved and a lot of influence on me. I love them. And they had a lot of influence on me. But the way that the world was led back then is still the way that we lead it now.
Right.
And a lot of the things that were motivating then were survival based. Better pay, more opportunity, bigger title. I mean, right? That's always been the case. And the conversation was always right around projects and profit. And if you look at how we're expecting to motivate and lead people today, they're still using that. And this generation of people is not, they're not motivated by that. They're motivated by purpose and impact. And one of the things that I have seen work really well, I would say it's probably the number one most impactful factor for people who are looking at making a transition, is the leaders who are wanting to transition out have got to make the last part of their legacy, one of the last big moves that they make, is to help their organization understand how significant the people and the teams and the organization is to people's family and our community.
Folks, this is good stuff. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I talk about. I don't think I make quite the impact that Dwayne does. I apologize. Keep going. They just need to know this is good stuff.
Yeah. And when you see, I mean, I could give you the list of 35 or 40 business owners that have done this. And what happens is that the business can be sustainable once that clarity is defined. Because people every single day are coming in to work, bringing their A game because they understand how significantly they're needed and they understand the impact that they can have on their team, and they've connected this greater purpose that the company can have to their actual personal purpose. Personal connection to a great purpose and vision is the secret to growing sustainable companies that people want to dedicate their careers to. And when leaders who are ready to make the transition understand that, what they begin to quickly realize is that what draws people to their business is not them, which is going to continue to live on once they leave, once they sunset. The company will sustain itself and will continue to move forward as long as, number two, that leader picks leaders who are personally aligned and called to that greater significant purpose or vision, right? So picking that next generation, that next transitional leader, once you get clarity on that purpose and vision, you have to develop that initial couple of leaders who are aligned with that to carry it forward. That's the only way that these companies can be sustainable. And I'll tell you, I have watched this happen time after time. I've watched really profitable companies within 12 to 18 months recklessly decline because the person who was driving the energy in the organization was no longer there, or the new leader came in and made it all about profit.
Do you find in construction, maybe more than any other business, that it does seem to be developed around an individual? And therefore, it's hard to transfer that business model. I don't know, maybe it's true of all, you know, all businesses that are of a certain size, that they, what I call the cult of personality, is not something that's transferable. Does that make any sense, what I'm trying to say?
It does. And I'll give you the analogy that we communicate to our clients. If you're the hero of your business, as soon as you leave, you'll be the freaking villain.
Because good call.
You not being there, when you're the center of the circle, when you're the center of influence inside your current business, people are trained to come to you for answers that they already have, for questions that they already have answers to. And what happens in businesses that are led by a hero, we ultimately create weaker leaders who don't have the confidence, self-esteem, or the ego built up to make decisions and be empowered on their own. I'm dealing with four or five companies right now where that's my biggest barrier. It's not that they aren't clear on their purpose or their vision. They don't have enough self-confidence to stand up and make decisions for themselves, their team, or the company, because they've never had to. Captain Saver, bro, the guy who just made a bunch of money in the transaction, who's no longer there, was the guy that did it.
Well, yeah, I'm just going through in my head all the times that this has come up. You know, I was fortunate enough to be invited to the Command and General Staff College National Security Roundtable this week to witness leadership among, you know, the top individuals in the Army, and see how the military, and by the way, I want to tell everybody, totally impressed after 2.5 days. I learned so much, and I can tell you our country is in good hands. These people are not just purely warriors, and I've learned some valuable lessons on how they communicate. And they said, you know, we've got to communicate at a high level what we're doing and where we're going, because we turn over majors, and mostly majors, at the college every 4 years. So they got to have a model that's in place that withstands the test of time. I struggle because I find it very difficult, Dwayne, in trying to help people with that process, but everyone needs to have that process in place. Usually, and what's most fun for me is somebody walks in with a letter of intent on a big acquisition, you know, and I can just do my job as a merger and acquisition attorney. But to be blunt, I can be more help by bringing together their team of trusted advisors to get the business ready for sale. And that usually means doing succession planning and exit planning. What I saw in the military from my brief time there was a high level of communication, a common purpose, a chain of command and an understanding of everybody's role and the opportunities that could be presented for them going forward. And I saw a room of about 80 people, half of which were majors or lieutenant colonels, understand and acknowledge their role in all of that. And I would like to figure out how, in fact, that could be maybe a model for businesses. But I don't know, is that too constricted, Duane? I mean, is that the right model, or is that one of many models? And I imagine you could probably say it depends on the business, right?
Well, quite frankly, you know, what's beautiful about a model that works, it works anywhere. And I certainly do believe that that our military, it might be the best on planet Earth at developing leadership pipelines and constantly preparing and transitioning people into and out of authority. They're brilliant at that. Will that work in construction? Absolutely. It absolutely would work in construction. So then the question is why don't we see more of it? There's two reasons why we don't see more of it, in my opinion. Number one, I have yet to ever meet someone who genuinely doesn't value leadership, but those same exact people do not prioritize their time, and they don't value the time that it takes from a calendar perspective to identify, prepare, yes, train, and reinforce their leaders. Because in our industry, the myth is that the project is more important than the people, and that's not true. People trump profit. People trump productivity. From the perspective of a leadership team, they have to focus on developing the people, because people drive profits and people drive credibility and obviously productivity, right? But in our industry, we don't do that. Number two, there's not a real model for us to follow. The military is a great model to deploy. Just a lot of people don't understand how to deploy that inside of their business. I mean, quite honestly, if you took the military model, which is genius in two areas, number one, they give everybody a time frame. And number two, they have other people prepared to take over as soon as that time frame's up, right?
Right.
But if we were to take that model and a book out of Andy Reid's championship playbook, we would add one factor to that, is realizing that when you choose a leader, we have to let them succeed and fail. And what Andy does brilliantly is he works his butt off with a couple of other people to put a game plan together. They then get out on the field and they start running plays in a series. And as soon as Patrick Mahomes walks off that field, Andy Reid goes to the bench, sometimes while our defense is getting their butts handed to him, and sits there and looks at how the defense responds to every single call and play that our offense and Patrick Mahomes runs. And what happens is Patrick gets back up off the bench, sometimes 3 to 5 minutes later, goes right back out on the field, or let's call it a job site, and runs plays with new knowledge and sometimes even more inspiration. Could you imagine what would happen in our industry if we just literally looked at the basic model in the military and applied Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid's model to it? It wouldn't be an industry that's chock full of people who are disengaged, right? It'd be yes, an industry where people are constantly trained to be better, to grow, not just to deliver a freaking project on time and profitably.
And that's, you know, to your point, it still has to be done, but it transcends that. One of my coaches over the years, Dan Sullivan, a strategic coach, says that money is a byproduct or an outcome. It's the behavior, you know, it's how you approach really attitude and behavior on what you do for a living. Money is just an outcome, so to speak. So at the end of the day, I imagine, and I think we're going to see a lot more of these coming up, there's going to be more and more mergers and acquisitions coming down the pike. Have you been involved with helping people through that process?
So obviously when we're involved with a company is going through, is about to engage, is currently going through, or just, you know, come out of a transition, there's a legal piece, and there's a strategic piece, and there's a culture piece. You know, PineRQ obviously doesn't do the legal piece. That's above our pay grade, right? But people oftentimes will say to me, man, it's amazing the acquisition and merger season that we've just gone through. And I looked at them, I'm like, what do you mean gone through? That was the freaking first quarter.
You're so right. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, no doubt. And yeah. And what people are going to start to understand and see is that you have all these companies, especially in growing markets. Now I'm in Texas. This is the number one construction market on planet Earth. And what people are going to see is that the valuation of companies isn't going to drop that dramatically. Well, Dwayne, there's a looming recession. Yep. But in growing markets, that looming recession is slowing them down from 85 miles an hour to 75 miles an hour, and it's not putting a big dent in their valuation cost pricing. And what we're trying to help people understand is we need to be looking at the long game. What's the 5, 8, 10-year perspective? Because I guarantee you that the value of a potential acquisition in a growing market where someone wants to actually expand into, those are not going to get cheaper.
Right.
They're just more buyers.
Right.
So one of the things I showed, I've got three boys. They're junior in high school, freshman in high school, eighth grade. And I've talked to them a lot over the course of their life about entrepreneurism. I was talking to them the other day at Henry Ford and was talking about their attorney, Henry Ford's attorney, that was advised not to buy Ford stock. And instead, he decided to put $5,000 into Ford stock in, I think, 1903. He turned around and sold that stock in 1919 for $12 million. And so I got really curious and I said, I wonder what $12 million is worth in today's dollars. $187 million. So that really triggered me, and my boys were really impressed with my math. I was just doing Google search, right?
Right.
But I then wanted to go back and look, what's $1,000 in 1999 worth in 2023? $1,871. My point is if you're on a 10-year growth plan, which is what most people need to be on, if you're on a 10-year growth plan and you know an acquisition's in your future, the sooner you start in trying to identify and qualify the right acquisition, the better that acquisition and the more likelihood of that marriage actually working. Instead, they think that they need to put it off and they'll get to it in the year 3 or 4. And then they don't get it done until 7, 8, or 9. And by that time, they don't have enough time to work that investment to get a good return before they exit. It's the craziest thing.
I can echo that 100 times over. Let's do this. Let's break down 3 different categories, and I'll ask you for your top 3 pieces of advice. Let's start with succession planning. And succession planning to me is finding people that are going to move up in the company and take over positions for other individuals. I can get into more detailed definition, but hopefully that'll get you thinking about maybe 3 ideas. What would be the top 3 ideas that you would share with people in order to help them with succession planning?
Number one, unequivocally, define a timeline. And if it's sooner than 3 years, figure out a way to get it to 5. It's going to be way better. Number one. Number two, don't do anything else in your business until you take the time to uncover what your greater purpose is for your organization. Why does your organization exist besides making a profit? Every business exists to make a profit, right? That check that box. But we like to ask the question, what's the greater need in the community that your organization of people can actually serve well and be profitable at, right? So get clear on your purpose, your vision, and your guiding principles. 3 things that most people and our industry don't value as much as they do projects, right? But get clarity on that. And the reason why I'm saying to get clarity on that is because the answers to those 3 pieces, your guiding principles, your purpose, and your vision, is going to tell you the type of person, personality, and what their passions are for the people that are created and called to lead your business forward. If you're making a choice on future leaders based on their freaking resume and their personality, good freaking luck. I can tell you that's going to work 60% of the time. We've got to find people who are qualified and have passions about what your business is about and how you serve the community, because those are the people who are going to push through hard times. I'm literally working with a contractor that went from 90 million 4.5 years ago to 600 million.
Oh, that's hard to scale. I mean, that's just a lot of hard work.
This is a fact. Hmm. And the number one problem that drove the issue that they're in now is just not understanding cash flow and what it takes to stay in front of resources and costs required to grow. Every other key performance indicator that we put in place in that company was off the charts. We literally recruited in that time frame somewhere between 1,400 and 1,600 people, right?
Right.
And here's my point. My point is that over the last 12 months, they've gone through probably the worst debacle I've ever seen a company go through. But what amazes me in the conversation that I had just this morning, what amazes me is that, well, let's call that organization a warrior. That warrior has had an arm chopped off, a leg chopped off, right? They've been on a few landmines, but that warrior is still standing because the heart of that business is still intact. And unless owners get really clear on the heart of their business, it will not be sustainable through a transition. It might be for the first year or two, but there's nothing driving the business past the hero leaving or the profit model that it was on. Not possible. The third thing is obviously aligning yourself with leaders and finding leaders that are called as a human being to carry that flag forward beyond that person leaving. If you don't have those three things, an adequate timeline, clarity of direction, and leaders who are personally connected to what your business is trying to do, it ain't going to freaking work.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Let's shift gears a little bit. We've talked about succession planning, moving people up. Now let's isolate to the owner himself. He's got the people in place to take over. From his vantage point, exiting the company, what are the top three things that you would recommend for him or her?
So let's say in that thought process, they had an adequate timeline. They got clarity of their direction, purpose, vision, and guiding principles, and they were able to identify and start to develop leaders who then made it through the transition. The number one thing that leader should do is constantly confirm and inspire the leaders who are now responsible to carry the rest of the organization forward. People get knocked down every single day. And if you're an executive or a manager listening to this podcast, you know exactly what the hell I'm talking about. We are not selling pots, pans, or ice cream. And at the end of the day, this is a very difficult business. And people are not built and wired like they were 35 or 40 years ago. Those people don't exist. We're a society chock full of people who need constant confirmation and constant reminders of why we're doing what we do and why we choose to work inside these design and construction companies on a day in and day out basis. If you don't have a leader that's constantly inspiring and confirming, you're going to get people who get burnt out and pissed off. That's just how this works. The second thing that I would strongly encourage them to do is to constantly support in a positive way those leaders by holding them accountable to their potential, not to their performance.
Interesting.
I'm telling you, this is something that I uncovered several years ago. Yes, congratulations. Someone on your team hit a sales goal for the year. Fantastic. Celebrate that. But the question really gets down to is, what's that woman or that man's potential? Congratulations, you hit the sales goal. But what's their ultimate potential? What could they have achieved if they would have really applied their skills, gifts, and talents and made decisions based on what they believe, not just what everybody else expects, right? And so if you find leaders that are constantly holding people accountable to their potential, you're going to find a leader that's constantly fighting for your best version of you.
I am going to share a secret. I heard something like that yesterday at the Command and General Staff College, literally. you're spot on. Let's talk about the third element, and that is the actual sale of the business. What would be the top three pieces of advice that you would give to the owner of a company selling their business?
Okay, number one, the highest bidder is not the most qualified purchaser.
Bingo. Bingo.
Not possible. Not possible. And I've been a part of several of these transactions, several of these processes where we had multiple buyers at the table. And one of the things that I would strongly encourage owners to do is to identify a buyer who has a purpose and a vision that's in alignment with the one that you've been able to get clear on. Because essentially, you're able to then hand a big group of people over to an executive or a management team that's trying to do what you've been trying to do, right? And so you've just made a much bigger army to continue to serve the community, the industry sector, families, people, whoever you're targeting. You've just handed over a prepared group of people for a bigger war. So find that buyer who's in alignment with your beliefs, your purpose, and your vision.
Brilliant. Anything else on that?
Man, some of the things that I've been watching over the last 18 months, I've been a part of some very aggressive acquisitions, some of which were like 10 to 12x EBITDA for some really large design and construction companies. I've also seen some small ones. Trying to figure out in that timeline why it matters to the people who are sticking around after you get paid out, why it matters to them. Help them connect the dots to why they should care. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal. And in my experience too, when somebody buys a business, once you sell the business, I find that the buyer may not want the former seller owner to be around because it sends confusion to the employees who they report to. And invariably, that new ownership group, no matter what anybody says, is going to run the company differently, no matter what anybody says. And there's going to be a parting of the relationship sooner than later.
Yeah, 100%. It's really hard for most people who have been the hero, because most of these firms are built that way. It's really hard for the hero to move from the Patrick Mahomes quarterback on the field to the number one fan. It's a really tough transition.
Yep.
It's a really tough transition because most people's personal identity is wrapped up in their career and in their job. It's not wrapped up into something greater. And that's what I love about this generation of people. The current generation, regardless of your age, if you're working in 2023 and you're in design and construction or in any industry, most everyone now has become aware that you are much more valuable than just your career. You're much more valuable than your trade and your craft. And we have to expect that from our leaders to help us to see, understand, and to live that way versus the old model.
The old model has gone away for everybody, whether we like it or not. I want to thank Dwayne. First of all, he's taking valuable time out of his day where he's going to be down presenting to some folks down in Texas. I want to thank him for coming on the show. I greatly appreciate it. Great insights, a lot of enthusiasm. So, Dwayne, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I mean, so pioneeriq.com is an easy way to get a hold of us. At pioneeriq on Twitter is a great way to get a hold of us. Hold your pants there, Sider. I'm going to actually give them my cell phone number because that's our business. Good. Is personal. If you're struggling with this issue or you just literally want to argue with me about it, which I completely entertain that, call me on my cell phone, 913-636-7373. If this has been helpful for you, I hope that it has been helpful for you. But if you're really struggling with it, this is the only reason why we're here. Call me.
Excellent. Excellent. Again, I want to thank all the listeners for my podcast. It's really appreciated that you support this podcast. We would ask you to go to your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and rate the show and leave me a comment. If you are in need of assistance, please reach out to me at dsider@spencerfain.com. I can be reached as well by telephone at 816-474-8100. And thank you all for listening in today. Goodbye for now. We'll talk to you soon. This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, I would ask business owners to consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.